I am wildly impressed at your reflexes right now, Melody.
Thank you.
The fact that you did not just blow my eardrums out with that sneeze and successfully hit the mute button. Wow.
It came out of nowhere.
Y'all, Melody's a fucking wizard.
I'm Melody Carlisle.
And I'm Sabrina Bradley.
And this is Heaving Bosoms. This is the podcast where best friends recap romance novels and other kissing media that makes us swoon, snark, and refills our cups.
Whether you've read the book or are coming in blind, we'll lay bare every delicious scene and revel in the tropes and subgenres that make romance amazing.
All right, listener, strap in and strap on. Headphones are highly recommended.
Hello there.
It got sultry for a minute.
Yeah, we were like 5 and 6.
Ooh.
How very here's Chicago of us.
Is it true? It's true. Pop. Okay.
Swish.
So I have sort of popped my head up out of a Theodora Taylor hole.
I'm impressed that you are still in the Theodora Taylor hole.
She's got me. She's got me.
How many of her books have you read now?
I don't know, 18? Okay. Something yep. like that. And Clementine Dove is a narrator she uses a lot, and she's incredible. So big fan there. Listen, did you know that Theodora Taylor dabbled in some paranormal werewolf Viking time travel books? Did you know that?
I did not, but I am looking at her back catalog right now.
Yeah. I read her Viking Wolf. It's a very straightforward title.
That's not the one I was looking at. Well, I see her Scottish Wolf.
There's a series. There's a series.
Apparently, she also has a dragon series.
There is a dragon series, and I'm pretty sure I met one of her dragons in one of her Russian books when Ivan sells his estate to a guy that smells funny to all the werewolves. And Ivan's Russian book is set in the same town, this reclusive werewolf town that this book is set in.
You know that I'm a slut. Ah. Serieses that all tie together, and you're about to drag me kicking and screaming back into Theodora Taylor.
I'm not sorry about it. No, she, like, I don't think she invented the strategy of ensnaring readers by crossing over books and series and all the business. And, like, she doesn't even do it really obviously. You know what I mean? Or at least I didn't think so at first until I started looking for the signs and watching for the Easter eggs. But, yeah, she has definitely mastered that strategy. Katie talks about that, too. Katie Robert talks about that quite a bit. Being like, tie it all together.
Yeah, make it all tie together, then you're sucked in.
Yeah, your read-through then goes through all of your serieses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've also experienced that with, like, Regine Abel and stuff like that. Like, yes. They're just so good at multiple serieses, and then you have to read them together, but also separately. It's convoluted. Like, right now, I am looking at Theodora Taylor's back catalog, and it is convoluted as fuck, because usually you're like, oh, this is the first book that they ever wrote, and then you can just kind of go from there. And there are so many books here, and that is not possible to do here, period.
Oh, yeah. Nope, she's doing it. She's out here just doing it. Okay, this book is set in now times at first, and then a werewolf accidentally gets shot through an Outlander-style portal into the future. Okay. He's a Viking one. He's a Viking king, I'll tell you. He's a king, okay? And this lady is just trying to live her regular life. She's, you know, she's engaged to a billionaire that has been her best friend since childhood, but she's not actually in love with. And they can't figure out why their relationship hasn't kicked off her heat. No, her heat.
This is Omegas?
No, it's werewolves, period, the end.
Okay.
It's just a heat. It's just, she's a lady wolf, and she's going into heat.
Okay.
If she feels sexy about somebody, and apparently nobody realizes that she feels no sexy feelings about this billionaire boy.
I mean, like, that's fair.
Yeah, right? So she meets this.
Just because he's got billions of dollars doesn't mean you have to feel sexy for him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially since when they're your childhood best friend. No. Mm-hmm. And like, boy, does she get.
Does he get a book?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
And if I have my druthers, it's with a sister of another thing that is mentioned who's an academic. And they hate each other really hard. And it's enemies to lovers.
I love an enemies to lovers.
Yeah, I got to read that one next, but it's not on my hoopla. So I had to take a pause.
Where are you going to get it if it's not on your hoopla?
I mean, I'll get it on Audible, maybe. I'll use a credit, I guess. You know. But, well, I had to actually take a pause because I ran out of my allowed titles. I maxed out the amount of borrows that a hoopla will allow.
I didn't know. Okay. I still am in the land of hoopla-less.
Yeah, no, I didn't know there was a limit. I think your, like, library sets the limit because of the way that, you know, people are paid or whatever. Anyway, she gets kicked right in the face with a Viking heat. And then she gets exiled and she tries to run away. But then this guy tricks her into time traveling back with him to the past.
Yeah. Oh, God. He tricks her? How does he even know how to get back?
Well, it's part of the spell. They have to say a Viking phrase together. Mm-hmm. And he tells her that it's the phrase that'll make it so they'll break up forever. And they won't have any mate feelings for each other anymore. And instead, it's a tricky time travel. And she gets sent back to the Viking age. It's like, a 1000 AD or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. And it only works because she's like a homesteader kind of person.
Yeah.
Who really
so
likes.
So she's like, hey, she's okay with that.
She really wants that kind of lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, you're stuck in that hole. Meanwhile, I've read 8 aliens in the last 2.5 days.
Really?
On top of reading book for today, on top of recording twice. It's the ones that I mentioned the last time we recorded, and I just didn't stop. I read 4 books yesterday.
Oh my God, Sabrina, I'm so happy for you.
On top of everything else that I had to do to make the rest of my life work, you know?
Incredible.
So, like,
incredible.
But, like, I just couldn't put them down.
Which alien series is this?
It's the Alien Abduction series by Honey Phillips, and there's 20 of them, and all of them are...
There's 20 of them?
There's gonna be 26 of them, because every book starts with the next letter in the alphabet.
Oh!
Right now, I'm on Izzy and the Ice Beast.
And he's
basically
that.
A Yeti. Yeah. Well, okay, so... This is one of those instances where I read the first book. I think I mentioned this the last time we recorded.
Yeah.
Like, I read the first book, and it didn't vibe. And then whatever reason, I picked up the next book. And these are, like, to be clear, these are horny alien books. And I don't know.
Excellent.
I don't know how she did it. Like, the third book in the series is called Cam and the Conqueror. And it is straight up, like, he is slave master. She is human sex slave. And, like, I don't know how she made it work because, like, all the way until the end of the book, she sure did. And it's probably one of my favorites. Like, I love him as a hero. He's fantastic.
Whoa.
But, like, it's, like, one of those things where not every book is the same kind of alien. Like, there's a lot of different things and, like, different worlds. And, like, you just barely meet the next hero or the next heroine.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden the next book is about them or a couple of books later is about them. And it's like, I just like, I'm playing a guessing game of whose book is next, you know?
Ooh,
and
ooh, ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a fun game too.
Well, so like this one was Izzy and the Ice Beast. And I was like, well, obviously it's that Yeti person that we met last book. It's got to be the next one. But then the next one is Joan and the Juggernaut. And I have no idea. I have no idea. Wow. I'm also very curious. I'm actually looking right now because I'm curious what the Q name is. It's got to be either Quinn or Quincy, right? Like,
that's a good guess.
Quinn. It's Quinn and the Queller. Whatever the fuck a Queller is. Don't know
somebody
what that is.
Quells, you know?
I guess. I don't know. I can't stop, Melody. And honestly, it took everything in me.
Such a fun premise.
It took everything in me to be here today, you know?
I hear that.
Because, like, you want to be crawled into Theodora Taylor's hole. I want to be crawled into Honey Phillips's hole. But we have responsibilities.
I know. We love listener.
Listener is important. Even if all I can think about is Yeti nodding, you know?
Yeah. No, I hear that. Yes, absolutely.
Except they're even called rings there.
Instead of knots, they're rings. Yeah. I love that. Okay. Well, we've got very, very extra special listeners, though, that we have to shout out personally.
Special listeners today.
Because,
look,
everybody, there's a lot of ways you can support the show. Listens are amazing. I mean, just like, you know, downloading and engaging with us, following us on social media helps. Anytime you do a word
liking,
of mouth really
commenting,
helps.
Telling people about how unhinged we are and how much you love it.
Right. Writing us reviews or just giving us like ratings wherever you listen, that helps. But there is also
Patreon.
It's called Patreon. And you can support the show directly on Patreon. So we're going to shout out some of those people.
Thank you.
Hey, seriously, thank you so much for joining Patreon. I hope you love everything we're throwing at you. So welcome to Elizabeth D and Lauren H.
To Maya A and Elizabeth P.
Louise P and Ari.
Lauren S and Ashley B.
Veronica and Stephanie M.
Robin K and Emily.
Riley M and Marta O.
And Taishira D and Meredith B. Super appreciate you because we literally wouldn't be able to do this without everybody's support. You know?
Yes, absolutely.
And we're just shouting out a couple of names, but everybody's important.
Yeah.
If not you, it's just me and Melody screaming into the void.
It's
true.
I mean, and that's fun, too, you know?
It is.
But the more, you know, the more support we get, the more time I can spend on this and shouting into the void with you. Mm-hmm. And I really like talking to you, so.
I do, too.
Being able to justify all the hours
give it
we
a reason.
Spend together is really nice.
Oh,
you
my
know
God,
what I
it's
mean?
A lot of hours, too.
Okay, listener, we have been very cagey with each other about how we feel about book. I randomly chose a book called Death's Obsession by Avina St. James, I think.
Graves. St. Graves.
St. Graves is what it is, because we haven't done a paranormal in a while. And the hero is death, and the heroine should be dead. But it's not. And it's a lot of trauma. And it's a lot of other stuff. So
stalker.
Sabrina,
it's a lot
oh my
of
God. Yeah, it's
possessive.
Big stalker. Yeah. Sabrina, how did you feel about book?
It's a book that I read.
Okay. So you have no like, you know, big feelings about book.
That's the thing is like my big feeling. Okay. So there's a lot of stuff in here, this book that should be catnip to me. This is a catnip book, right? This is this is a catnip book for me, it should be, you know, like as I was reading it, I was like, there were moments where I was like, oh, hell yeah. And like, this is amazing. And other parts where I was like, yeah, this isn't that whatever, blah, blah, blah. Then I finished the book and I sat there for a second. And it's a book that I've read.
Yeah.
How
so
did
it's funny.
You feel about book?
That's basically how I felt about book.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, relieved. Okay. I was a little concerned you were going to come in, which this is fine. If you absolutely loved book, because I found out this afterwards, the book you accidentally picked, or not accidentally, but the book that you just randomly picked.
Yeah.
Was a huge fucking TikTok book talk sensation last year, apparently.
Really?
And Instagram. Because I went down the rabbit hole because I was like, how do other people feel about this book? Like, I have to know, because it was just, I was just a little underwhelmed, and that's okay. It was just a random book that we picked. It was like, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then I went down the rabbit hole of TikTok, Instagram, and reading the reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent like a solid 2 hours watching TikToks, watching and reading Instagrams. Like, I was like hyper fixated the hell out of this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was wild, the dichotomy, because BookTok was losing their goddamn mind for good reason. Because, listener, the dedication to this book is to the girls that think the Grim Reaper will fuck like a god.
So pleased.
Writes a lot of checks. And I think that that's the problem, is there were a lot of checks written, and I feel like they didn't get cashed, you know?
Interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But like, it blew my mind. And this is one of those moments where I realized that BookTok recommendations, I just don't think BookTok recommendations are like, it's going to be a hit or it's going to be a miss. Because BookTok recommendations, they're either, they really work for me, or I just am like, why is this so crazy popular?
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
And like, almost everything I saw was people freaking out about the dedication and talking about like 5 out of 5 I love spice that. And like all of these things, and I was like, this isn't a I guess my smut meter is just broken.
I think,
because
we have,
this
broken
is not
smut meters.
Well, like, spoiler listener, but okay, so like his soul comes out and they DP her,
and they do a big DP on her. Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't even, I wasn't even fazed by it. I was like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So here's what's interesting, I feel like. I had no idea what I was going into. I normally don't read the dedication, but I happened to swipe through it and I was like, that's incredible. I'm into it. And this book gave me a lot of vibes that I like and have loved in the past, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this book gives me Sleep With Me by R.M. Virtues.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of dream demon sex in there, and it's, you know, it gives me, like, similar
this
vibes.
Book made me wish I could reread for the first time. Like, I could read again for the first time Sleep With Me and
King of Flesh and Bone.
King of Flesh and Bone.
Yep. Yeah, there was another one, too, that I'm blanking on right now. But yeah, it gave me a lot of those vibes that I was like, oh, yeah, like, I'm really, really into it. And I enjoyed the book. I read it twice. Yeah. I had a great time.
How? We decided on this book less than 48 hours ago, Melody. How did you already read it twice?
I did a lot of gardening today, and it has an audiobook. So,
okay. Boy, okay.
Yeah, it was awesome. I had the best day today.
You blow my mind, Melody. Like, you blow my mind.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, like, I loved it, but I don't know why. It's not something that I'm going to be like, oh my God, I have to tell everybody about it. You know? Like, it's it's an incredibly competent, delicious book. And you know what's funny about, this is what I was thinking when you were talking about the smut meter, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like sometimes people get confused between like a smut meter and like a butterfly's meter. Does that make sense? I feel like a smut meter is like, what are the physical things that happen and are described, and what level of detail are they described in?
Okay.
I can have zero feelings about the smut and still give it a 4 chili pepper smut meter. You know what I mean? But there's like the romance and the and like the butterflies, and like if the smut gives me like, you know, is like really inspiring, or like I can't stop thinking about or whatever, I feel like that's different from a smut meter. Does that make sense?
I could see that. Yeah. Yeah.
Because, I would give this book a 4 or a 5 chili pepper, right?
Really?
I mean, there's a DP for the general population.
I guess that's what I'm saying, is like, mine's broken. Like, a DP is not 5. Like, the DP isn't a 5. Like, I think that I'm just coming at it from a completely.
DP for me is like a 3.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a 2.5, 3, you know, like at this point, that's in most books that I read, like not most books, but like, it's common enough that I'm like, I don't bat an eye at it. It's not something that makes me go, oh, I guess there's also like two different meters of like a shock meter and also a smut. And I think that I struggle with that, where like it's
the
hard
shock meter, yeah,
to separate smut meter or spice meter and the shock meter. Because like sometimes I read a book and I'm like literally agog. My mouth is dropped. And I'm like, I cannot believe that author just did that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, holy shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know how. I think it's just another one of those things.
I enjoyed book.
Yeah, well, see, and that's the thing is, like, I read it, I enjoyed it, but then when I closed it, if we were not going to be talking about it on podcast, I probably wouldn't have ever talked about it to anybody.
Sure, yeah, you absolutely. Know? Yeah. So, okay, listen, we do have to do a bit of a trigger warning because there is a list of trigger warnings that is incredibly comprehensive. And
yes.
It's so comprehensive, it's almost like, is that a trigger? Like anal is on there.
Yes.
And I don't consider that a trigger or like a content warning, but I understand why you might think, you know, other people would appreciate that.
I will say I was immediately hesitant seeing that trigger warning list.
I know.
Okay? The reason I say that, and this is like, I don't think we've ever talked about this on pod, but so I do read a lot of dark romance. I like dark romance a lot. There seems to be a thing in the dark romance community right now, and I've talked about it a lot with like friends and things like that, where it's like, I personally feel like authors want to just have the biggest trigger list ever, but it doesn't actually add to anything in the book. They just add them in because that is a draw in a lot of dark romance reader communities. Like, if there's a lot of triggers, then it's like, oh yeah, because like a lot of times people are like, I want something that's gonna test my limits, it's gonna like push me, that's like gonna I haven't found my hard limit yet and I want to find it. And so they look at a book that has a page and a half of trigger warnings and they're like basically salivating at it, which is fine, but because of it, I feel like I don't want to read a trigger, like something that is triggery, just for the sake of you being able to add another trigger to your trigger warnings list.
Okay, I see what you mean. So you're saying that like it,
for
like
the
instead
sake
of adding
having
in tropes,
yeah,
people be adding in like acts or components.
And it's just like
the story.
I don't necessarily think that that was the case in this book, but I will say I was hesitant going into it because of it. Like,
I
think that the trigger list was perfectly valid and adequate reading this book. Like, I didn't feel like there was anything where I was like, oh, this was just put in here so that your trigger list was longer.
Interesting. I had never thought about that, but that's, yeah, I see.
Well,
I see,
yeah. So like, I'm in a couple of dark romance communities on, you know, like Facebook and Reddit and things like that. And so like, I just can't tell you how many times people are like, I just want the craziest trigger list book you can possibly find. And it's like, yeah, but does it add to the book, you know?
Right. Is it functional? Does it do something?
Yeah, is it necessary?
Is it just
in here to be shocking? Like, is it just for shock value? And that's the same thing. I have the same issue with, like, I was just talking about the shock meter, you know, where there are sometimes where I read something that make me go, what the fuck? I've never seen that in a book before. And it's like, but was it necessary? Like, sometimes it's not particularly well written. Sometimes it's not impactful. Sometimes it's literally just, you know, two pages of description so that it's in there.
And that's sort of what I was trying to get at with the smut versus like butterflies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because in one book, a wrist touch has made me be like,
yes.
Oh my God.
Well, and like, to be clear, there are quite a few moments in this book where I was like, like,
oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I really liked the amount of agency this author managed to give the heroine with a really serious stalking element.
Yeah, I was impressed by that. Like, so like, and that's
amazing.
That's the thing that I'm not sure what it is. Like I said,
it might just be our mood.
That's entirely possible. I did cry at multiple parts because I'm definitely on my cycle, you know, like
there are times where
it's also like a deeply emotional book. Like the check those trigger warnings, and also like just big trigger warnings in general. This episode, we're gonna be talking a lot about death and grief and suicide and like,
yeah. And then there's also an on-page emotionally abusive and mildly physical. Well, should be mild, but like there's also physical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
There's an arm grab that is not cool. And there's a lot of drug misuse.
Abandonment.
Lots of abandonment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, it's heavier because it's a dark romance, and that's what we wanted. So here we go. Okay, we should get into it. Hey, everybody. Wow. We come in and Shane East, the narrator for Death, is coming in hot in the prologue, waxing poetical about being Death, carrying out Death, and then realizing that he never thought he wanted or needed a soul until her. And it's good.
Like, it was a super flowery. It was a real. So, like, my very first quote is from the prologue for this book. Oh. And it's, "She is a storm on winter's day, and I will be content with never seeing the sun again. She offered me her soul, and I gave it back. Not because I did not want it. Oh, I wanted it like a flower wants the sun, like a river wants the sea. When I come to collect her soul, it will not be to take her to the afterlife. Mm-mm. No, her soul will be mine to keep." Mm-hmm. So, like, we're starting off strong. There's a lot of flowery descriptions in this book. And I'm not mad about it.
But it doesn't venture into, like, the purple prose area, you know? Mm-hmm. But I will say that there's a time later on where the heroine talks about him reading sonnets to her. And I was like, yeah, he did. Like, I get that from the way that he's written.
The way he speaks.
The way he speaks, the way he thinks, absolutely. Yeah. And then chapter one opens up.
Opens up hot. She's getting letters while she sleeps.
Yes.
And marks left on her body and, like, in charcoal.
And everybody thinks it's a mental health crisis. Her psychiatrist actually tells her that she must be sleepwalking and drawing this all over herself on her at night.
And writing these notes to herself and leaving herself presents. And I'm like,
flowers.
Girl, you need a new therapist and a new psychiatrist.
Especially since she's paying out of pocket.
This is medical, whatchamacallit.
Malpractice?
Yes. Like,
let's just say they weren't a good fit. And she's paying out of pocket, going broke, like, is buying powdered milk because she has no money.
Yes.
And then paying for these antipsychotic drugs.
Yeah, to get rid of hallucinations.
Right. And then therapy sessions in which the therapist tells her that she's making it all up and
she's being gaslit?
Yes, by her therapist.
Medical professionals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck? Because this entire time, because she is at this point stopped telling people. So at this point in the book, she knows of the male main character. She calls him the faceless man. Ooh. Nobody else can see him.
That's hot.
She very rarely sees him. And like, she has stopped talking about it to her mental health professionals because they keep telling her, basically, you're crazy.
You're crazy.
You're doing this yourself.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That is, to be clear, listener, if your mental health professionals are doing this to you, find a new mental health professional. Like,
I mean, and like, especially, because this is the thing, right? It's like, I can understand why a medical professional, a science brain, would be like, prob's not. Prob's definitely not. You know, like, you're not getting magical schmurgle blurgles and you're not anything else. But, you know, I don't know why they're not in
digging deeper, because like, clearly,
or, like, considering
this woman,
the fact that it might just be a stalker.
The fact that they don't even question, like, what if she actually has a physical stalker?
Yeah, what if it's just a mortal man?
Like, oh my God.
I don't know. But it's wild.
So the reason that this has all started, listener, since she was in a really traumatic car accident, she fully has PTSD and, survivor's guilt and a whole smorgasbord of other issues with it. But she was in the car with her sister, her twin sister, Dahlia.
Dahlia
and her terrible boyfriend, and he wraps their car around a tree. Mm-hmm. She gets flung out of the car, and then her sister and her sister's boyfriend die by fire.
Yeah.
And she's in a coma for a month. And then when she woke up, she started getting these notes and getting these presents and stuff. And it's like, a year later.
It's a year and a half later.
This has all been going on. And they're just still like, well,
Let's give you a couple more milligrams. Yeah.
That's not how you deal with PTSD, my friend. You should.
I would love to take your $150 for this session. Please leave with your Looney Tune booty.
Yeah, we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Enjoy your powdered milk, bitch. Yeah. Thanks for paying for my fucking vacation to Disney World.
Right, right. Like, it's like that. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So she also has this terrible boyfriend who wasn't terrible before the crash, allegedly. I don't know that I believe that because she's not a very reliable narrator.
She is not a reliable narrator. She talks about how he was beautiful and wonderful and perfect and they were so good together before the accident.
I just don't
and
I'm think
like,
so.
Or are you like, are the rose colored glasses just taken off because you almost died?
Or is it so bad that, like, you can't actually contemplate how low your standards have always been? You know what I mean?
That's like, fucked up, but you're not wrong.
This poor woman.
His name is Evan, and he is a piece of shit. One of the reviews that I saw. So, like,
yeah,
that was one of the things is, like, this was social media blew up. Like, this book was, like, everything.
The I mean, there's a lot to talk about.
Oh, yeah, no. But, like, the reviews were consistently, like, 1, 2, and 3 star. And they were, like, it's a book that I read. Or, like,
oh, really?
It was fine. Yeah, like, the actual review. It was wild. Like I said, the dichotomy between the social media presence of this book and then the review presence of this book is very, very at odds with one another. But one of the reviews was, like, fuck Evan. I will not be elaborating. Goodbye. And I was like, this bitch knows. They got it. They've got
that.
Because, like,
that.
For real. So Evan is her boyfriend. And he, oh, my God. He refuses to live together because apparently he needs to stay sharp for his job and can't do that if she keeps him awake with her ramblings. How about some empathy,
because
bro?
She's waking up with nightmares instead of being like, is there something we can do to help you through these nightmares? He's like, I don't care if we're broke. We're both paying rent in different places because I cannot with you.
Yeah.
Like, that's not very supportive. Not only that, but he also constantly treats her like a burden. And
yes.
And what is not quite said out loud is that the main reason I think that they're broke is because he has like a heroin problem or something.
He has built up a new drug habit. I'm 100% certain that's why he lost the well-paying job that he had.
Yeah, it might be pills, you know, or something, but like
whatever
he has a
it is.
Significant like he snaps at her one the very first chapter and then he says, oh, you know, I'm so sorry. That's when he grabs her arm and then he says, oh, I'm so sorry. You know how I am before I get my first hit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a problem.
Oh, and I assumed he was talking about coffee at the very beginning of the book. I forgot about that quote.
But
you've read it twice.
I thought
so, you
so
caught
too.
That.
It's drugs. He's a drug.
Oh, yeah. Fun. Oh, I can totally see looking back how there's a lot of clues to that.
Yeah. But it's never quite said out loud. So
until the very end.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
so
when something truly shocking happens,
I was not prepared. I was not expecting
that,
to be frankly. So apparently there's also, like I said, listener, big trigger warning on like suicidal ideation and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because basically what has been keeping her alive, according to her, quote unquote, like, I pushed the drawer full of the faceless man's gifts back into the darkness and slipped between the cold sheets to lie next to a man who doesn't know those letters are the only reason I'm alive. And I'm like, honey.
Right.
Like,
right.
She's a sad puppy.
No, it's bad. And the other thing that's not, I mean, it is said out loud, but it's subtle, I felt, is that there have been multiple times where she has attempted suicide in the last year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And so, from her perspective, it's like, you know, the faceless man is the only thing that's sort of getting me up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But from his perspective, he's like, I control death.
Yeah.
You're not going to die.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Good try.
Well, and she makes a like at one point, I think I have a highlight somewhere in there, but she's like, I keep trying to die and death has abandoned me too. Are you
death
fucking
doesn't even
eating?
Want me.
Are you eating a fucking puck of Mexican hot chocolate again?
Yeah.
Okay, listener, you are okay. Wait, sidebar, listener. Okay, Last time we recorded, Mel was eating this gigantic thing, right? And she was just nibbling on it the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was just a gigantic Reese's cup. And I remember thinking to myself, Mel has more control than I do, because I would have shoveled that thing into my face and then just called it good.
Mm-hmm.
No, I find out after the fact, because Mel looks at me after we finished recording, because she knew that I would have demanded that it went into the fucking episode if we were still recording. She looks me dead in the face with like a devious 3-year-old smile. And she's like, you want to know what I was eating during the recording? And I was like, and it clicked.
Inordinately proud of myself.
And I was like, yeah, what the fuck was that? I thought it was a Reese's cup. Until I could see the inside and it was just solid black. Mm-hmm. What the fuck was that? And she's like, you remember that hot chocolate that Mary sent us?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, you were just eating a puck of
this
hot
is the
chocolate.
Other half of that same hot chocolate puck. So I saved it like a lady, okay? I saved the leftovers. And now I am consuming that leftovers, because sometimes I have time to make hot chocolate and other times I don't have time to make hot chocolate.
It's just like,
and otherwise,
this is the
equivalent. Mexican hot chocolate is delicious.
It is delicious, but it's like the
thank
equivalent
you, Mary.
Of me going and getting just a packet of loose powder and just like sitting here with a stick and like fun dipping it into my mouth.
You've never fun dipped a hot cocoa pack?
I have, just not as my podcast snack.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do that either for a podcast snack, but I have done it many a time.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? Give
and
me just a bowl
not even
of hot
stick.
Cocoa mix.
It's usually this index finger.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, it's just the finger. I was just thinking about, like, while I'm podcasting, I would need, you know, a clean hand.
No, absolutely.
Anyway,
wait. So I need Mary to know specifically. Hello, Mary. It's you and me right now, and I love you so much. I have made serious hot chocolate with this, okay? I've also made it for my kids, and I've shared with my family. They know the bounty that is Mary. This is just something that I had to have for me only right now. Thank you so much. Okay.
Meanwhile, I haven't had any of the hot chocolate yet because I haven't had milk in my house since I got the package.
Oh, my God. You got to get your shit together because it is.
I just never. I know it's delicious. I fucking love Mexican hot chocolate. I just haven't had milk in the house because I keep forgetting to buy milk and I almost never have milk in the house.
Yeah, fair.
Anyway. Okay. So she is getting ready for work and she is taking a shower and then she sees through the shower curtain, a shape of a man, but Evan has like already left for work. And so she's like, it's a faceless man, and like rips the curtain away and there's just nothing there. And this is definitely the first time where we're like, oh, this is definitely paranormal.
It's for sure. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
absolutely.
We knew that from the prologue, but
but I know what you mean. Yeah. This is the first time that we're like, wait a second.
And then let me tell you, she gets out and starts getting dressed and she makes a bunch of comments about how weirdly her clothes were fitting. And I was like, I swear to fucking God, if this woman is pregnant.
Right? Same thought.
Okay. I also have a question. Okay, listener. So I'm so sorry. I have so many questions about this book. And so there's going to end up being so many mini spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
She comments on how the clothes are fitting her weirdly, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Turns out, we find out later that her faceless man has been secretly swapping out her items for items of higher quality.
Right.
Which, like, I can't imagine. I would notice immediately because every single pair of pants I own are $13 pair of pants from Walmart. And I'd be like, what the fuck is this Old Navy bullshit? Give me my Walmart jeggings back.
Yeah.
But
I hear that.
Why does they not fit?
So I think it's twofold. One of the reasons is that they just fit a little bit differently because they are higher quality. And I don't think they're as stretched out as the original pair that's like however many years old. But the other thing is that the zipper on the original pants would snag. And so I think just like the act of zipping them up is different. And that would also make it feel
like it's one of those
like
things where you don't necessarily notice that something has changed, but you can tell something's off.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
So he's been swapping out like more waterproof leather boots for her shitty leather boots and like
a warmer coat jacket
for her shitty coat.
Which like swoon. Okay.
I mean.
This, okay, the faceless man is swoony as fuck, and where do I get one? I don't want to have to almost die in a fiery car crash to get one, but like, I want a faceless man.
I love a man who problem solves and shops for me. I hate shopping.
This is why I'm saying, like, there's so much catnip in this book for me.
Dress me, daddy.
Feed me, dress me,
take care
of all my problems. Like,
hydrate me.
Yes, exactly. Oh my God. But anyway, so now her shithead boyfriend, Evan, and that's the only way I will not ever describe him once in this episode without some sort of adjective about how terrible he is, okay?
I mean, I just don't understand why they're still together.
I don't understand why he's still with, like, I can understand how while
her
she's getting
feeling
over,
beholden to him.
Yes, I can understand why she is still with him. And I guess, like, I understand why he is still with her. Like, he probably feels, like, shitty and guilty at the thought of breaking up with her after this horrible, because to be clear, she is alone in this world, listener. Her parents are dead. They died of some kind of cancer. Yes. And within, like, 6 months of each
other. Bowel cancer, something like that.
Something to do with your insides.
Same cancer, okay?
Yeah. And so she's alone in this world. All she had left was her twin sister, and now she's gone
too. Now it's zero people.
Well, so this morning, he hasn't left for work because this is the morning that this motherfucker grabs her by the arm hard enough to bruise her after giving her a bunch of shit about using her money to go see her psychologist and get more medication.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, he's what the fuck? You're hurting me, dude.
Right.
And then he's like, holding her and kissing the top of her head like, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. You can fuck right off, Evan.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. You can go kick rocks hard without shoes on. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. No, and like, that's a lot of it. Like, with Evan, it's interesting. It's an interesting dynamic, I think, because they both have fairly low-paying jobs. She's a barista. And so one of the things that he gives her shit about is like, how did you not make more tips? And she's like, my job isn't tips-based. Like, people
don't understand.
As somebody
who was a barista, tips were extraneous.
Right. Like, a lot of people don't tip baristas, you fuck. And he's like, why don't you smile more? Like, he's the worst. Mm-hmm. But then he's like, well, they're cutting my hours. And so even though they live separately, I'm wondering if this
their
is a recent
finances
development.
Their finances are tied?
Their finances are joined.
Or
and
like
maybe
he asks her to send him money regularly?
Yeah, he says, like, can you transfer money? We are out of green. Oh, and it's like, God. No, I feel like you are. It's
Fuckface
you.
Fuckface McGee is literally the worst.
Yeah.
Like,
and all he wants is his next fix. Like, that's a big problem.
Yeah. So he does that, and then we hear an ominous, like, knock, knock, knock. And when he opens the front door, he doesn't see anything, but she can see the faceless man standing in the street.
Uh-huh.
And then when she blinks, he disappears.
He's
but
gone.
Then she gets a text message. And it's like, oh, shit. He says, death comes in shadows in the light. It does not need to wait for the dark. For him, I will come as a hurricane.
Okay.
Faceless man is mad.
Faceless man is making not very opaque threats.
This is why I don't know why I was startled towards the end of this book, right? Like, looking back, I'm like, I just
all the
wasn't,
signs were there. We weren't Sherlock Holmesing hard.
No, this
at all.
That didn't Sherlock. Okay, I Sherlock Holmes a lot of things in this book.
Okay.
Not that.
Okay.
Definitely
so anyway,
not
she
that.
She is really surprised by this because he has been literally, he has been communicating with her literally on parchment paper, brown parchment paper that looks like it's been written on by like a swirly fountain
calligraphy.
Pen.
Yes.
And so now she's like, wait, he can do text messages? Like, this mm-hmm. is new and weird. But she realizes that she can talk back to him. And so she's like, who are you? And he's like, you know me as well as I know you. And she's like, I don't know what the fuck that means. That doesn't mean anything to me. Mm-hmm. And, like, she ends up going to work that day. And she always looks forward to opening her locker at work. Because he'll leave her, like, he usually presents? Leaves her a lily. He leaves her, like, flowers and presents mm-hmm. and stuff. As things become more dire, he just leaves, like, money clips in her bag and shit.
Oh, my God. Like, where's my faceless man? I could really right. use a faceless man right now. You know, like, yeah. I'm at a spot in my life right now where a faceless man would be real nice.
It'd be great, you know? I think. Yeah.
So she... Sorry, I'm catching up because we're... It's one of those things where we're... We keep touching on things before they actually happen. Yeah. Which is fine. Some books, and I feel like this is a book where we kind of have to do that mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. for context. Because we were, like, listener, no lie, there were points where I was lost as to what the fuck was going on.
Oh, really?
Not, like, totally lost, but I was like, mm-hmm. why is this important?
I see.
Because, like, yeah. there's a lot of little, like, things dropped in the beginning of the mm-hmm. book that get, I can imagine rereading it, I'd be like, oh yeah. Okay. Like, I didn't catch that the first time around. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So now she's at work. She's, like, hoping basically to not get fired. And then doesn't she go over to his house? Isn't that what happens next?
Well, no. So she ends up, she's asleep. She, like, we zippy zap to bedtimes. And okay. she goes to sleep and she's having a dream where she's standing on a beach. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the faceless man, every time, the reason he's faceless is he has a black hood up, you know, and you can't, she can't Soul see what's eater. Underneath that. That's exactly. Yeah. I was Soul just about was to the say other it's, book it's like got when. Vibes.
Yep. It was. I got those vibes. Same. In this book.
Yes, I did not. Yes. I hadn't put that into words, but yes. Also same.
Mm-hmm. That was the third book. I couldn't remember. Yeah. Yes. Soul Eater by Lily Maine.
And so she's having this dream where she's standing on this beach of black sand and he's like cradling her head and telling her how beautiful she is and like how she's his and all of those things. And then he's like, you cannot run from me because I will catch you. You cannot hide from me because I will find you. I have smelt your scent. Let it linger on my skin. You are imprinted in my memory. You are mine, Lilith. There is nothing you can do to escape me. Which like... Red flag central, and I'm into it.
Yep. Red flag central into it.
I am wildly impressed at your reflexes right now, Melody.
Thank you.
The fact that you did not just blow my eardrums out with that sneeze and successfully hit the mute button. Wow.
It came out of nowhere.
Y'all, Melody's a fucking wizard. Like, if I had not been looking at the screen, I would have had no idea that just happened. But in fact, I did see your brain almost explode out of your ears.
That's what happened. Wow, that was wild.
Anyway, so then he asks her if she tastes as good as she looks and uh-huh. puts his finger in her mouth and then sucks uh-huh. on that same finger and says yeah. that she's intoxicating.
Uh-huh.
And then he is like, okay, it's time to wake up and kisses her. And then it's she's awake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it's Saturday morning and she goes over to Fuckhead Evan's house.
Uh-huh. And there's a girl there.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck? Well,
and the reason she came is because he said the night before that he had a headache. And so she uh-huh. came with headache medication to like help take care of him. Uh-huh. And he's like, I didn't ask you to do that. And she's like, I was just trying to do something nice. Who's that girl? And he's like, I didn't sign up for a jealous girlfriend.
You're crazy.
Oh, what are you talking about?
And then there's a knock, knock, knock coming from underneath the house. And she can see the faceless man standing behind Evan?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So basically what I didn't understand in the first read through, which I now looking back is ridiculous, is that every single time Evan does something really shitty, Death is there to be like, knock, knock, knock. I'm right fucking here. I can see everything that you're doing.
Quite literally, when she gets back into her car, she has a new note sitting in her, like, on her dash. And it says, when Death comes knocking, it will not wait for you to answer the door.
And like, sir, that sounds threatening to her.
Her!
You know?
That's the thing. It's like, at the beginning, I was like, what the fuck is that? Is he going to kill her?
I don't understand.
Like, what the fuck? But like, oh my God. How did we not guess?
I know. We're dummies. We're hot dummies.
Oh my God. Well, so then she gets home and then...
She gets home and she's fucking... I mean, we cannot say this enough. She can't afford, like, bread right now. I think she's got, like, $19 to last her the next 4 days or something like that. Mm-hmm. And when she gets home, she smells lasagna. And she's like, I'm truly going mad now. Like, this is the hallucination I believe is me being insane. Because I can't afford... I haven't eaten lasagna since, like, before the crash. And it's my favorite food. Mm-hmm. And she walks into her dining room and there is a candle lit, gosh darn dinner sitting there.
And it's a whole lasagna?
A whole one. That you can
and a bunch of garlic bread?
Freeze for later. Okay.
Oh my God. And she, like a nitwit, calls Evan to thank him.
What? Oh, she's and such he's a like, sweet sweetie, you know?
He's like, what? What are you talking about?
He doesn't even say that. It's the best. Because he's the worst. He says, okay. Oh and she's like, wait. So, like, he's trying to take credit for it, whatever it is.
And then she realizes, like, he doesn't even have a key to my house.
Yeah, like, he can't afford anything either.
Mm-hmm. And then she hears a woman's giggle in the background.
Oh, and it doesn't sound like his flatmate, his apartment lady.
So then she hangs up on him, good for her, while he's still talking. And then she eats that delicious meal, and she gets drunk on that bottle of wine.
Well, and she leaves a note from him, too.
Well, no, she leaves a note for him.
Well, yeah, after that. Yeah, sorry. There was a note with dinner. Then she was like, how dumb am I? There's a parchment sitting right here. It was obviously the faceless man, not Evan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was unimportant. I'm sorry.
Well, then she leaves him a note that says, you should join me next time. And then he responds and says, the only thing I'll be tasting is you.
Yeah. Yep. And now it's sleepy times because it's time to sleep. Also, she's hammered.
It's also on TM.
Yeah. Well, it's sleep time because that's the only place they can sex each other right now. All right. So, wow, he does a sex on her. He goes down on her real good. And then I think he says, it's only fair that you should taste me too, right?
I brought you a meal. It's only fair that you offer me one in return. While he's looking just straight down between her legs.
Oh, yeah. But then afterwards, he's like, I tasted you, so it's only fair that you should taste me. And then he fucks her face, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, so his soul, we find out it's his soul, separates from his body. And now there are basically two of him, except one of them is an 8-foot version. And it's like fingering the hell out of her and has her up on her hands and knees. And then he just face fucks her. Real hard.
Yeah, and she loves it. Mm-hmm. So this is also, I would say, this is like a shadow daddy book, too.
Yes.
Like, if there was a prompt 10,000%. That was like shadow daddy or whatever.
This fits.
Definitely. So anyway, she's like, whoa, this is incredible. Great stuff. And then.
Well, and then. Yeah. Hang on. The sexiest part of this entire scene is that after she's come like 18 times and bit had the heck fucked out of her face, the shadow
I'm so sorry. It's hilarious that in our world, what you censored was hell. You said the heck fucked out of her face.
That tracks.
I know.
Like, I'm going to say dag nabbit, but I will graphically discuss the destruction of a pussy, you know?
Absolutely.
So anyway, the sexiest part is afterwards, the shadow sits her up and starts giving her a massage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would like a soul massage. Like,
and then she's like asking for more. And he looks her dead in the face, like, please, and says, please. Lilith, my sweet monster, because that's his pet name for her. My night monster.
Night monster.
I said I would taste you. I told you you would be screaming my name. I did not say I would fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has boundaries.
He wants to wait and claim her in real life or something.
He says it will be on his terms and not in a dream.
Right. And then he fingers her again to completion. You know, he's a gentleman about it.
Mm-hmm. And when she wakes up. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, so she does admit to him that because he's like, have you dreamed about this often? Yeah. Me between your legs. And she's like, because he's always like, give me your words. And she's like, merp. And he's like, your words, night monster.
She clams up when she's really horny.
Which, like,
it's hard for her to speak, talk, process, you know, relatable content.
Yeah, mood.
Yeah.
When she wakes up, she finds rose petals strewn about the room. And then she realizes that it couldn't have been a dream because she goes into the bathroom and she has bruises all over her body.
Yeah, he marked her and he did it on purpose. And the shadow spanked her one time, but it's like the shadow's hand is like a paddle. It's like big. And so there's no way that she could have like spanked herself or whatever. And she's like, this is more physical proof.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, and that's the craziest thing. They're all like, you're leaving these marks on yourself. And she's like, my hand is smaller than this handprint, bud.
Yeah.
Like, literally, how could I have done that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So now we get a chapter in his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about how he has always been inevitable up until her, where she has, like, stolen all of his focus.
Yeah.
And it turns out the reason he didn't let her soul go is because he wants to keep her for eternity, but he can't do that until she yearns for him as he yearns for her. But she has to yearn for him, not just death.
Yep.
Which is why every time she tried to kill herself, it did, like, he was like, I'm not faking that soul because you just want oblivion and I want eternity.
Hey, yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Like, sorry, bud. I'm not letting you walk through those pearly gates.
And that was a really interesting distinction to me because then he has like a process sort of doing not therapy, but like, I don't know, doing abandonment so that she will deal with her issues so that she will then be ready and like absence makes the heart grow fonder. She'll realize she misses him. And that's when he knows that she'll yearn for him.
Any faceless men out there that is listening right now, that will not work for me, okay?
No. No.
I have too much trauma around that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we also learned his name at some point. I don't remember when exactly, but we know his name now is Latum. Oh, because he wants her screaming his name.
Yeah.
Latum. When they were doing their horny times. And he's like, she's like, what's your name? What are you? And straight up the minute she said that, I was like, I'm old.
What are you? What?
How old are you?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I fully... I totally had a Twilight flashback.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, my name is Latum, but you're going to have to figure out what I am. I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, well, that's fine. Because now I'm screaming your name again because, you know.
Well, and she does a Bella going to the bookstore montage, basically, of like researching and stuff and going on the interwebs until she finally figures out that he's death. And then like later on, she tells him that.
And we have the scene where he like comes up behind her in the physical world and he's touching on her.
Yeah.
From behind. And he's like, give me your words, night monster. And she's like, please make me come after a bunch of back and forth because she can't get it out. And then she finally says that. She asks, what do you want from me? Mm-hmm. And he's like, everything.
Yeah.
And then he disappears. And then she's like, well, fuck. And she takes another anti-hallucinatory pill.
Yes.
Because that's what she does every time she sees him is takes a pill.
And I asked you very specifically for an orgasm.
Yeah.
You must be a hallucination because you didn't have the good sense to give it to me.
Yeah. How dare you? How
dare you? That you can do physical stuff. Prove it.
So then we learn about how, like, when she first started encountering the faceless man, she tried to get rid of her quote-unquote ghost, right? She did all of these things, and we find out that at one point she sages her house, and the next day he leaves her 3 bundles of sage with a note that says, try again, because he's a snarky asshole.
Yeah. Also, Maya, I want to make sure I'm on the same page as you about this.
Okay.
He renames her in this book, right? Her name is Lily.
It's Lilith.
No, it's not. I don't think so. Because she says, he's the only one who calls me that. Lilith is very famously a mythological, like, you know, she-demon or whatever. Like, very much in his realm of mythology. And she and her twin sisters are both flowers.
And her sister is named after a flower. Oh, yeah. My God.
It's wow. Dahlia and Lily.
Not Lilith. That's a bold move, Leo.
I know, right? I mean, I don't hate it. But it is a bold move.
That's a bold, wow. He's just like, new name, you know?
Yeah, a name that symbolically, this isn't in like an abuser way, because I feel like he knows she's having an identity crisis after having lost her twin.
Yes.
And so he's renaming her outside of Flowerland, right? Mm-hmm. So that she can sort of separate herself from Dahlia and make him more part of her identity, I think. That's what I got from it, but I don't know.
I mean, it tracks.
Anyway, yeah.
So now he disappears for 5 days, and she is not okay about it, especially because he left her a grand in cash the morning after they boned down in her dream, and now she feels like she's, you know, a purchased woman.
Right. She feels like she engaged in sex work she didn't consent to.
Mm-hmm. But then she realizes that she has a ring on her finger, on her promise finger.
What?
And engraved on it, it says, even in death. And then on the inside, it says, Latum and Lilith.
Wow.
And she's like, interesting.
Yeah.
So she finally is feeling like up enough. She's like, I got to break up with Evan.
I'm going to break up with Evan. I got to do it. And to be clear, listener, from the very start in chapter 1, she was saying, say the 5 words. And those 5 words were, I am breaking up with you.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a really interesting way to break up with someone. You know?
What do you mean?
She wants her to literally say out loud to the person she's breaking up with, I am breaking up with you, instead of, hey, person, we have to break up. I would like to break up.
She's just announcing
the declaration, I am breaking up with you. Is that how you do it? Have you said, I'm breaking up with you right now?
Almost every time.
What? I feel like, no. Mm-hmm. What? How?
Okay, so I know this is going to be shocking to you and everybody, but I'm highly conflict avoidant, right?
I was going to say, because it's a really passive phrasing.
I'm breaking up with you is not passive in the slightest.
Isn't it?
I feel like it's very aggressive. This is the law. Like, there's nothing you can say.
Okay, I was interpreting it differently.
Oh, really?
I was interpreting it as, like, she's a third party describing.
Oh.
You know?
So, the way I've always taken it, and so what usually has happened in the past for me is I just hit, I am somebody who I won't even realize that
you
something bothers me
done.
Until, but yeah, I hit that wall and it's over. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no coming back from it. A switch has been flipped and I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, I have made the decision. Mm-hmm. And frankly, you have no part of it.
Yeah, yeah. Breakups can be unilateral. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, every time it's just, I have a conversation with them, but like at some point in that breakup, it's, I'm ending this. I'm breaking up with you. This is over.
Interesting. Okay. Because just that phrase in itself, it felt like a distancing tactic. Like the omniscient narrator sort of was coming in. and being like,
it is very much a distancing tactic, because like, I know from my point of view, from like my experience,
yeah,
I'm distanced. I'm not in this at all. Like, I'm just here informing you.
Yeah. Okay.
Another person could very easily come and inform you in place of me. But unfortunately, I have to do it because, you know,
because I've got some decency left in my body.
Just as easily, I could call you and have you call them, right? And you're like, Sabrina is breaking up with you.
Okay.
It's just, unfortunately, I have to be the messenger of our demise.
You're right. Okay, so I think you're right. I was taking distance as passive. But distance doesn't have to be passive.
Mm-hmm.
Distance can be very aggressive.
Well, and actually, you know, it's almost like... I literally just said that it's aggressive, but at the same time, I feel like it's not passive. It's not aggressive. It's literally just a statement of fact.
Right. It's a declaration of fact. Yeah.
Yeah. This is done.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, she goes there to break up with him. Evan, I'm breaking up with you, she's going to say.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been napping all afternoon, his roommate says. So she goes in there and that boy is cold. That boy is super dead.
Blue lips. He is done.
That boy has apparently overdosed.
He also, well, we don't even know that he's overdosed at this point.
It says it literally out loud, yeah. Later on, yes, you're right.
Yeah. But at this point, he's just dead. And by the way, of note, in that room is the cardigan that we saw that one girl wearing that one time. There's a scrunchie. There's lip gloss all over. Like, it's very clear that this woman spends a lot of time in Evan's room.
Just break up. Like, come on.
I don't understand cheating.
Especially not like this.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Like, so at his funeral, this girl, like, stands with his family as if she is the capital G girlfriend.
First, though.
Yeah.
She gets a note from Latham before any of the funeral happens. And he says,
Evan's chest.
Mm-hmm. And he says that even though Evan's soul hadn't been called yet, it was lost the minute he saw Lilith for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Sir.
How was I shocked that Latham killed Evan? You know?
I don't know. Right? Me. Yeah,
or not.
Same.
No, not killed.
No.
Took.
He very specifically important. Did not murder this man.
He took his soul.
He just separated his soul from his body. Thank you very much. Uh-huh.
And you know what? No further questions from the court.
Yeah, I didn't break your legs. I twisted them. I twisted them.
Yes, exactly. This is the version of that. Like, it's semantics, and semantics are important, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So then we have all the funeral stuff happen, and she is super conflicted but at the same time, not conflicted at all. Like, she does not feel guilty about Evan being dead.
No.
She's like, because he's been dead to her for months.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a very, okay, I have a question about that.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a statement. Even
I don't
when
think
I
she said
up.
That. She didn't say, he's been dead to me. She says, I've grieved him already.
Mm-hmm.
And that I understood.
Yes. Because I remember there being something in there, though, where she says something about, like, something has, I don't know, whatever. It doesn't really matter.
Okay,
but
yeah.
She doesn't feel guilty about it. And, oh my God, this line punched me directly in my face.
Yeah.
Because she says, the worst part is, despite the accusations running through my head, I don't truly feel guilty. I only know that I should be. But I didn't ask Latham to kill Evan. I can't be at fault for a trigger being pulled when I didn't even know there was a gun. Well, God damn, girl.
Yeah.
That's a statement.
Yeah.
And, like, that's something I need to remember in my daily life, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because, like, I feel guilty for shit that I didn't do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, something bad happened? Somehow it's my fault.
Mm-hmm.
Let me figure out how I'm in trouble for this.
Yeah.
And then he appears. Oh, we're not even at the funeral yet. Like, he shows up
in the room and she confronts him being like, you fucking killed him. And he's like, nah, I didn't, though.
He specifically says,
yeah,
the afterlife would not have taken him if it was not his time. Mm-hmm. Such a painless death was a kindness, my thunderstorm. Because of you, I did not make him suffer.
Yeah.
Well, shit.
That's very nice.
Okay, yeah. Latum. Thank you.
How do you feel about the nicknames in this book?
Which one?
The nicknames, plural.
In general?
At all.
I'm not a fan of Night Monster.
Yeah, I was wondering if that is one of the chief reasons I didn't connect with this book. Is because Night Monster always gave me like a record scratch moment.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
I think that that's also part of it. Like, there's a lot of little things in this book that like were record scratch moments.
Mm.
Where like I couldn't ever be like in book.
Yeah.
Because at a certain point, and I think this is where it lost me, is at a certain point I had had so many record scratch moments that I was just waiting in anticipation for the next one.
Okay.
Because it was about halfway through, like the first couple of chapters, the first like, you know, 30 to 40%, I was in it. I was in there and I was like, let's fucking do this. And then from there on out, it was just it.
Well, and isn't that interesting? Because in Deal with the Demon, Pan calls her Le Monstre, and we loved that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know why this one didn't work for me, but it really didn't. And I'm wondering if it's because I call one of my kids Monster Friend.
Mm-hmm.
So
why
I don't know.
Why did Le Monstre not bother you then?
I don't know. French? Question mark? I don't know.
I don't know. I think that, like, to go back to that conversation that we had before we even started actually diving into book, it's just, there's so much, because, like, right now, I'm not going to lie to you, Mel. I almost messaged you, like, and said, I don't want to record on this book. But now I'm enjoying it. Like, I was not looking forward to record. I was like, I don't even know what we're going to talk about. What is going to be interesting about this episode? And it's definitely not a lighthearted episode. This isn't us a lot of laughter. It's not a lot of swooning. It's a lot of discussion. But also, that's kind of, I think that's important to talk about. How, like, sometimes it just doesn't click.
Yeah, that's true. So, anyway, now the funeral happens and then he disappears.
Real quick, though, just to go back to the nickname thing real quick.
Oh, yeah.
To me, Night Monster felt forced.
Is, yeah, okay. Yeah.
But
Thunderstorm worked for me hard.
I didn't get the connection. Why Night Monster?
Oh, yeah.
What make Night Monster? Where Night Monster come from? But Thunderstorm?
Oh, that worked hard.
If he had called her my Storm the entire book,
I'd have been in it to win it.
I'd have been. That's exactly it. So she gets back to her car. She's basically in shock for the rest of the day. She somehow has to be the one to tell his family that Evan is dead?
What
was
the
that
fuck
crazy
is that?
To you?
Yes.
As crazy as it was to me?
I mean, maybe because I feel like they've been dating for at least 3 years.
Yes.
And so at that point, yeah, like who else would do it other than like the police?
The police?
Yeah.
It blew my mind. And I don't think that there's any reason you can give me. That I'm going to accept for why she was the one to tell his family that her boyfriend is dead.
And I love the fact that she's like, I am not obligated to notify that girl that he was definitely with. Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody can make me.
Well, and she ends up. Oh, so she's like super in shock the rest of the day. She does all of these things. But then
he
this like,
up.
Well, this hurt. So she says, everything crashes when I make it to my car. Like a live wire, everything in me ignites. The static in my lungs burn as I scream, pounding fists and palms on the steering wheel over and over and over until my throat is completely raw. My hands begin to bruise and my arms burn from the pain. I'm bitter. I'm angry. I'm upset. What is wrong with me that death doesn't want me? Why not me? And it's like,
woof.
It's because you don't understand yet, Lilith.
Yeah.
Death does want you, but like,
in a different way.
In a different way.
Yeah. But that also, I really connected with that whole train of thought. Not proud of it, but I did. And like one of the first time, the only sexual encounter we've really talked about up until this point, when she asks him to have penetrative sex with her and he's like, no, her first thought is, oh, because he doesn't want me.
Yep.
Obviously. It's because he's not attracted to me.
And this just reinforces that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
all
not even death wants me.
all of her attempts to meet him in the past. He doesn't want her. When she's finally face to face with him, he seems to not want her.
Well, and she thinks to herself, like, I haven't done anything in the past year and a half to look or feel like anything, let alone sexy. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, he doesn't want me. I'm drab and scarred and complicated and gross. And, like, Evan certainly doesn't want me.
Yeah.
So, of course, this guy doesn't want me either.
Well, now, this is when she goes to take one of her antipsychotics. And when she opens the bottle, she realizes that it's not her pills.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pill, a white pill with the sign for Lilith on it. And she's like, oh, my fucking God, he fucked with my medication.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been taking my medication. And then she stops. And I think that this was like, if there is any point where she hallucinates in this book, it's right here, you know?
Right.
Like, because I think she had been taking her medication because she proceeds to cold turkey quit all of her medications.
Yeah. And like several of them are antipsychotics, you know,
the withdrawals are bad enough. On, like, oh my God. So she just cold turkey does this.
So she's, like, getting brain zaps all over the place. Like, oh, it's not good. She was, like, she spent 3 days, like, puking.
Yeah. So she ends up going home. And when she gets home, her TV's gone. It's replaced with a painting. There's candles all over the place. They're, like, all of the gifts that he's ever given her and the letters he's ever given her are, like, strewn about her room. This includes the bags and the jackets and the letters and the flowers and the feathers. So many feathers.
And I think that there were a bunch of things that she had left at Evan's house.
No, it was stuff that had been missing, that went missing at her house.
Oh, that's right. Because he did a big U on her.
Uh-huh.
He took a bunch of shit.
That's exactly what he did.
Yes. Like, hopefully not used tampons, but yeah, everybody's got a flavor, I guess.
Hey,
I hate that. What I just
like
said.
That, the
I
way
hate it.
I can't what everyone had. You had to.
I dislike the order and word choice that happened just now.
Yeah, there were a lot of different ways that you could have phrased that, my friend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, but
and I
what's
chose
done
them.
Is done. What's done is done.
I made my choices.
And anyway, so there's just a final letter on the bed that says, I'm coming for you. Merp?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is when she wakes up. So she wakes up in another dream and he's behind her and she looks at him and she's like, I know what you are. And he's like,
oh, that's right.
Say it. And
she's like, vampire.
Exactly. She looks him dead in the face and she goes, death. And then he says, good girl.
Good girl.
Mm-hmm. There is a good girl in this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just like super hardcore make out until he's on top of her on the bed. And he acknowledges that the reason he took Evan, not kill, because I don't kill, I take, is because he laid a hand on her when he shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And he said shitty things to her and he wishes like I had been horrible to him and like mutilated him.
Yeah. I think the important part about this scene is that she wants him to acknowledge that Evan was never competition. And he's like, yeah, obviously I know that he wasn't in my way to like win you. But I really didn't like the way he treated you and spoke to you. And so I killed him dead.
Which like that's swoony. I'm not going to lie.
That's fair. He is death, you know?
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I would have been a little disappointed if death hadn't taken Evan, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how I didn't already see it coming, but, you know, whatever. So she admits to him she doesn't understand why he wants her.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he explains to her all of the reasons that he does. And it's, you know, fine.
It's romance.
Yeah.
It's romance stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then she's like, I don't even know what you look like. And he's like, you'll be allowed to see me soon. And when she goes to take off his hood, he stops her and he's like, your eyes aren't open yet. You can't
she's
see
like,
me.
Look at my fucking eyes. They're fucking open. He's like, no, your metaphorical ones.
Your inside eyeballs.
Yeah. And she's like, I don't have time for metaphors. What
Which,
are you
like,
doing?
That's such a mood.
Yes. Yeah. There were a couple of times where I was like, this is unnecessary death. Like, you don't have to be so cryptic and fancy about stuff.
You could be a little less cryptic.
Yeah.
You could be just upfront about just
literally
one thing.
You know? Yeah. And so, anyway, then he, listen, for the rest of the book, it's him fucking off in her mind, but still being right there from his perspective. He just, like, won't reveal himself to her.
Yes.
And so, the first time, he leaves for, like, 2 weeks or something bananas. And in that time, she finally gets to the point where she wants to visit her parents and sister at the cemetery.
Real quickly, though, just right before we get that, there was a really poignant statement where she states that Evan was her anchor, except the rope was too short and it kept her drowning below the surface. And I was like, fuck if do not identify with that. Like I said, there's a couple of points in this book where it was like, fuck.
Yeah, no, the imagery is on spot, on point.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, she finally goes and feels healed enough to go and visit her mom and dad and sister at the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
She ends up sitting there and just chatting to her family.
For hours. I cried.
Yeah. Tells them all about him. She's like having like a sister download session, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so he is like, I told her that when she does well, especially if she does well in the realm of using her words, then she's going to be rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she gets home, she has a nanny cam, and she got a nanny cam specifically because people were telling her shit like she was getting up and writing on herself. But the whole time, every single time she looks at the nanny cam at night, it is blank. Like it'll do
a
blip.
It's just cut.
And like hours are gone. Because he's doing magic death stuff on it.
I had a full paranormal activity at that, you know? I was like, fuck.
So anyway, he gives her one of the videos, and it's the video of when she got Eiffel Towered by him and his soul, you know?
She did an Eiffel Tower. That's exactly what she got.
It's a digital Eiffel Tower, yeah.
Yeah, and so she's watching. And the way she finds it, though, is she's having dinner, and then she hears moaning from her bedroom.
Oh,
and she's like,
right.
Did Latum leave me some weird fucked up present? And then when she goes and finds it, it's just her in the bed. You can't see anything.
No.
And it's just her being railed by some otherworldly
something.
Yeah, like...
Which, would that be sexy?
I am still picture. Undecided. You know how people are like, I don't want to see my O face? I don't know that I want to see my blowjob face, you know?
Well, especially when it's just like...
There's nothing there.
It's phantom blowjob.
Yeah, it's just you with your mouth open,
and your
gagging
mouth, like,
on something.
Making weird...
Glug noises.
The glug glug noises. It's just like your butt is just like rippling because something is pounding into it, but you can't see the thing that's pounding.
Well, and it's one of those things where, like, I don't know, because to be clear, in one of the Catherine Moon novel where one of the reverse harem boys is
invisible.
Mm-hmm. It's hot as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I don't know how I feel about this. And
I know.
Think it's because it's a recording where I have to witness. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, it's very different.
It's different than, like, seeing yourself in the moment in a mirror. Than, like, analyzing the angles at which you choke on nothing.
Uh-huh. And all of the bits are moving. And the hair, like, I'm not sure how I feel about it, frankly.
Listen, she liked it because she was looking at it and she just sunk into the memory of that first encounter, you know, and that's great.
Yeah. So she gets horny and she's like, oh, he's definitely coming for me tonight or come for me soon.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes and she takes a shower and she's in the shower and she's a little horny and she reaches down to diddle her bits a bit.
And then he's there.
Yep, right behind her, fully naked.
Hey, girl.
And then he does finger her against that wall. And then he does pick her up and fuck her like a little rag doll against that tile wall.
Yeah, they have penetrative sex for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, this is not when I was expecting that to happen for the
first
time.
Me neither. Me neither, because he made such a big deal about, like, it being a special claiming. And, like, I don't know why shower sex didn't get into that equation
for me. Never crossed my mind. I thought maybe what was going to happen was after she got out of the shower, he was going to be there. But, like, not in the shower.
I mean, I was into it. And in the shower, he also does anal on her, doesn't he?
Yes. So he like touches her back hole and is like, I almost, okay, so.
He's like, how do you feel about
a
this?
A book that I read recently called it The Dark Tunnel.
Bah!
I don't like that.
I was like, I don't like that descriptor at all.
And so like when I was writing my notes for this, I was literally like, all I can think is dark tunnel. What else do I call this? I don't want to say anus, even though that is technically the correct term. Mm-hmm. Back hole, back under hole, you know?
There
back
you go.
Hole, that works. So anyway, so he does
he like touches up on it and he's like green, yellow or red. And she's like, oh, green. But like, you know, I don't want to let him know how enthusiastic I am about it. Why?
He doesn't need to know of all of the practice and experience that I have. And I'm like,
why not?
That's hot, though. Like, tell me about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then he is fingering her asshole and fucking her real good. And which, like,
I bet you would love if my soul was also in you and you were getting a good DP.
So then he does grab her by the hair, pull her out of the shower, turn off the light so she can't see him, bend her over the bathroom sink.
Yeah.
And he's like making a bunch of horny talk. And then he's like, exactly what you just said. I bet you'd like it if my soul fucked you too.
Was here too. So
he does, in fact, take her into
the bed.
And he shoves her on top of his soul, and his soul with the gigantic penis does penetrate her, and then he fucks her ass, and...
Great stuff.
Here we are.
A+.
Mm-hmm.
A+, and then after they're shadow done, daddy nonsense.
They're snuggling up, and she's like, you left me. And he's like, I never left, but also, I'm leaving you again.
Yeah.
And she's like...
I'm here now.
Yeah,
I don't give a fuck.
We'll take this night. But then it was super cute because he's like, "I'm proud of you," and she's like, "You know what?"
He says, "You've come so
far." I'm proud of me too.
And she acknowledges that she needs his absence in order to make these hurdles.
Yo, let's do this toxic shit. You be the don't leave me. You know, don't leave me. Let's just be fully toxic. Let's all in, friend. You know?
That's usually my inclination, too.
Yeah. I know that this is better, right? Like, as I was reading it, I was like, this is a much better way to handle it. This is good. This is good. But also, let's be toxic.
No, I didn't like... The thing I chiefly didn't like is that it was a unilateral decision.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He was like, I know what's best for you.
To be fair, he is a millennium old
god of death. I totally get it. But he could have at least told her that's what was happening. And he didn't. He let her worry. And that's the part of it that's like, you're not speeding up her healing by her spending a week and a half being like, will he, won't leave? Did he leave forever? What's happening?
Yeah.
Why doesn't anybody want me?
When she wakes up the next morning, it's not actually the next morning, it's 3 months later, and we find out that she hasn't heard from him, but he's been leaving a lily on her pillow every morning, but he hasn't written her any notes, but he is fixing things, so, like, her car tire gets fixed, he fixes, like, a piece of
her
wood.
Her fridge is always full.
Up. Yeah, which, like, hey, sexy.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Very sexy. And then she keeps on texting him, and it's like a one-way string where she just sort of tells him about his day, or about her day. And then she realizes, she goes to open the drawer of all his.
Well, so first she's been this one-sided texting, and then she texts him, invites him to dinner again, no response, all of these things. She's describing what they could have done, like blah, 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 blah. But then she tells him, then we can watch Ghost Rider after dinner and you can tell me if it's fact or fiction. And then he responds for the first time in 3 months and he says, fiction. And she's like, I miss you. And he's like, soon. And that's when she goes and finds all of this stuff. But he's finally responding again. And I'm like, why is this the point where you decided you should text her back? You know?
Yeah.
Why was that it?
Ghostwriter, I guess.
You don't want that left on parchment? Because she does go look into her drawer because she's missing him for the first time in 3 months. And when she opens it, all of the letters are his responses to her text messages.
What is that even? You know?
Sir.
Why? Like, so many of those responses are going to be non sequiturs I have no memory of. You know what I mean? They're going to
be. Oh my God, that's so confusing. I'm like, well, especially because, like, are they in order? No, they're fucking rolled up pieces of parchment. It's not like they're, like, nicely binder clipped in the order of which. Like, what if your answer is just. I don't know.
Sure.
Do you know how much I would hyperfixate on that? I'm not going to work the next morning. I'm going to be awake all night.
I'm doing the puzzle. I'm doing the red strings on the wall. Yeah. Trying to figure out what responses to what.
What goes to what? Also, do you know how long it would take me to register that they were responses to the text messages?
Agreed.
Like, as far as I'm concerned, they're just a bunch of random letters.
They're just thoughts.
just like.
Apropos of like, fucking nothing.
Oh, God.
Then she says, soon isn't soon enough. And he says, okay, if soon isn't soon enough, then meet me. It
word
has to
word.
Begin where he it says, ends. Starts where it...
Where to it end, start? You must go to the beginning.
Okay, yes.
And then she's like, what the fuck does that mean? For good reason. Except the minute I read that, I knew exactly what he was saying. I was like... Obviously, to go back to the car accident.
I had the exact same thought she did, which was the hospital where she was born. Like, really? And bitch got the same thing.
Two types of people in this world. So then she figures out what he means, and it's not the hospital.
No.
And she's like, okay. Well, she doesn't say okay. She says, she texts back, I'm coming for you.
I'm coming for you.
Which, like, what a nice roundup, you know?
Yeah, bookend. Yeah.
Yeah. And so she gets there and parks the car on the side of the road and has the headlights on that tree. And he's standing there. And she has started to get memories of what he looks, or they're not memories, but she's like, I know for a fact that he looks like he has this dimple in his chin and this scar on his cheek and eyes that have no pupils. They're just white. Mm-hmm. And like all of these white, like ways of what he looks like. And then she walks up to him and she takes off his hood and suddenly, boom, she has all of these memories of the nights that they've spent together, because she's every time she wakes up and can't remember her dreams, she was spending it with him, talking with him on the beach, wandering around, being read sonnets.
And that's why he said shit like, you know me as well as I know you. Except no, sir.
No,
not
well,
really.
Well, because she doesn't remember any of it.
Yeah.
But her dream self does remember it. So God. She's basically like, I don't know.
He's very frustrating to me.
How did you? Okay, well, let's finish because we're like here at the end.
I'm going to be honest with you, Sabrina. I don't know what happened.
Okay.
Like, I don't know what physically happened at the end of this book.
Okay. So she tells him that she's his for eternity, before and after death, that I see you. And then he has a big old quote about how she's a storm and she's beautiful and blah, 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 blah. And she's his. And he's so glad that she finally sees him on all of those things. And then she looks him dead in his beautiful otherworldly face and says, I'm ready. And he says, are you sure? Because you can't take it back. And she says, yes. And so he lays her on the ground and leans over her and kisses her. She sees her entire life flash before her eyes. Mm-hmm. And when he helps her stand up, her lifeless body is sitting on the ground because it's her soul that has stood up. And then a car comes around the corner and ends up flipping. And he's like, go ahead. She can feel the pull to the afterlife. She walks up to this car. There's a guy with his spine poking out of the back of his neck.
Yeah.
A redhead. And she goes up. She can feel the pull to these gates, but she... The end. Like, literally... So, this is... So, the final
Isn't
quote...
Isn't Dahlia there? Or is that later?
Dahlia's gone. This is it. Dahlia's gone. We never see Dahlia. We don't see Dahlia again after she started going to the... So, that is one thing, listener. So, she's been seeing glimpses. She has been hallucinating her dead sister. But that all stops when she starts going to the cemetery. She doesn't see Dahlia again after the cemetery.
So is that bonus chapter just their meeting for the first time from his perspective?
Have you read that?
Yeah.
Have you read the bonus stuff? Yeah, it's his perspective, seeing her for the first time.
Okay, so my question in this last scene was, is this a brand new car that supposedly just, like, hit her and that's how she died? Or is this the original crash where her sister and the boyfriend died and she didn't live the next year and a half in reality?
So this is a completely stranger. This is it's a completely different crash.
This is just a bystander that yes. gets killed in order for her to get killed.
Yes, essentially.
Incredible.
Well, so that's what I didn't understand. That's what I had questions about, because I understand everything that has happened. But what I don't understand is how it all connects, because like, did it, he quote unquote hit her?
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Is she standing against the tree, like at the memorial of her sister's, you know,
or like just standing
place?
There on the side? Yeah.
Or
and then he comes out of nowhere and slams into her.
Or did they supposedly like, maybe they got in a car, like a head-on car accident that'll be staged by death later? This was very confusing to me. And I don't know.
My last note okay. for this entire book. What the actual fuck did I just read?
I don't know what happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's and then very, the bonus chapter, which, because it was an audio. Yeah, because it was an audio, I got a little bit confused, because the very next chapter is him encountering their crash scene and seeing her for the first time and telling yes. Dahlia to like step into the light or whatever.
He'll take care of Lily or yes. Lilith.
Mm-hmm. And so because yeah. I sort of like maybe conflated those two things
okay.
while I was listening.
So see, my experience of this is I read the book and then I had to go separately download his oh. point of view and the bonus epilogue.
Oh, okay.
So did you get the bonus epilogue where they're on the beach?
Yeah. And she's like okay. doing death stuff.
Yeah. So like the first one is his meeting her for the first time back at the very beginning with yeah. the death, with her yep. death, where he's like, I'm not taking that soul because I want that soul for eternity. That's mine.
Yeah. We find out that the beach that they've been on with the big storm and like the prairie behind it or whatever.
Yeah.
Is the place that she conjured while she was in her coma.
Mm-hmm. While her body was healing, it was a place that her soul felt safe.
Yeah. And then the last chapter, the bonus epilogue is just like them in bed and her being like, I love being death's right hand. It's great stuff. Mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. still want to know everything about all the people that we usher into the afterlife, but I understand why he wants more distance, you know. Mm-hmm. And they're great. They're doing great stuff. They have a
yep.
they bone down again. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Goodbye.
Yeah. The end.
The end. They're together for eternity. And death afterwards, she says. Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
That doesn't mean anything.
I was more confused. I was more confused by the end of this book than I was at the beginning, frankly.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I liked book.
That's exactly it. So it's one of those things where I'm not screaming from the rooftops about it.
Yeah.
It was a book that I read.
Yep. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Sabrina, what's your lady love?
My lady love is sometimes you just got to have a little shrimp boil. For dinner last night, I bought 2 pounds of shrimp and a bunch of andouille sausage.
Ooh.
And I threw all that shit in the Instant Pot.
Yeah, you did.
With an onion and garlic and some crab boil. And I let that thing just do its shrimpy thing for like half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ate so much that I felt like a tiny puppy that drank too much water. My belly was so full.
You were distended.
But also it was delicious. I'm probably mm-hmm. doing it again sometime this week. I think I'm on a shrimp kick.
Nice. I dig it.
And so my lady love is sometimes you just, if you don't, it doesn't have to be a social thing. It could just be mm-hmm. you gremlining, reading alien smut.
Yes.
With gloves on. and just shoving your face full of shrimp.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. agreed. My lady love is have yourself a good old fashioned SVU marathon, you know? Boy,
okay.
Boy, have I been watching, not even watching, I've had SVU on in the background as I've been doing other stuff. And, you know, it just hits a spot that I didn't really realize. I mean, I've always known that I like the show, but mm-hmm. it is one of those things where it's like coming back to an old friend, you know?
That fascinates me because I don't know that I've seen an entire episode of Law and Order all the way through in my entire life.
Wow!
But wow. I do know what it's like going back to an old friend because I do rewatch White Collar probably at least once every other year.
Yeah. Yeah, my other one is the 1996 Pride and Prejudice miniseries.
Hmm. That's a good one, yeah. I think. Mm-hmm. I've never seen that either. I've heard that it's good.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. It's
Warehouse
really good.
13, though. I'll rewatch Warehouse 13 until the day I die.
Never seen that.
That's okay.
You know what? Have yourself your version of a good old-fashioned SVU marathon.
Have yourself your version of a good old-fashioned SVU marathon while you gremlin eat 2 pounds of your favorite food.
Yes, absolutely. And then keep being a badass.
And love yourself as much as you love being gaslit by your mental health professionals.
Yeah.
That's a terrible one. Yeah. That's all I think about, though.
Love yourself as much as you love saying, dress me, daddy.
That's a better one. That's an actual love yourself. Literally the minute we're like, love yourself as much as you love, you know what? Love yourself as much as you love not being gaslit by your medical professionals. That's what it is.
Spin on
that's
it.
That's the one.
You did it. We got there.
All right. Bye.
Heaving Bosoms is produced by us, Melody Carlisle and Sabrina Bradley. Editing is done by Melody Carlisle.
Our theme music is by the incredible singer-songwriter Brittany Fonts, and our art is by ultra-talented author Kate Pryor. If you like our show, remember to follow us on your favorite podcast app, rate us 5 stars, leave a nice review, and of course, tell all your friends about us, even if they don't read romance.
If you want to get in touch, you can email us at heavingbosomspodcast@gmail.com. If you want more of us, visit patreon.com/heavingbosomspodcast. You can also find us on Instagram @heavingbosoms, on TikTok @heaving_bosoms, and in our Facebook group, the Heaving Bosoms Geriatric Friendship Cult.
Head over to our website to sign up for our newsletter, get our Reading Embrace printable, and check out my audiobooks at heavingbosoms.com. All right, we'll be back next week with more Swoons and Snark. See you then.